As mentioned earlier,
I'm going to readjust some things because it's got to go my way. Always has to go my way. Always. So, I was born February 7th, 1972. That date has never changed. Go figure. And I'm going to get to that a little bit later on because a guy talked to me about that when I finally came in here. I've got a sponsor. His name is Don B. Don's got a sponsor. His name is Paul. Paul's got a sponsor. His name is Bill. Bill R. And a lot of y'all might know Bill R. And you guys, some of you, if you've been around, you might know him, you might not, but I know him. And I'm grateful that I do. And I give props to these guys because I'm thankful that Bill stopped drinking and decided to do something different. And then he got something, this deal here, and passed it on to Paul. And I'm really grateful that Paul stopped drinking and decided to do something different so he can pass it on to Don. And everybody in Atlanta, including myself, is probably grateful that Don stopped getting drunk. So he can pass it on to me. And y'all, there's no one in this room that actually saw me when I was out there. Be glad. You know, I got a friend of mine I talked to, and I do a lot of meetings. And there was one, he got this late night meeting that I go to sometimes. He's like, dude, what are you doing out this time of night? I'm going to a meeting. He said, are you still in them damn classes? I said, yeah, man. I said, the only thing else left for me to do right now is go to the specialty men's bars where I might act a fool. He was like, he paused for a minute and was like, no, you go there. You keep going, man, because Atlanta doesn't know what we know. You're the only hope that we got. So stick in there, man. My sobriety date is July 14th, 2007. My home group is the Heavy Hitters Men's Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am grateful to say that I am an active participant or member in AA. And I'm sitting here I'm tripping out, man. My wife told me something today. She counted down how much time I got to go to my birthday. So she's counting the days. She's never done this before. Never. So I was like, I'll tell you what. You keep counting the days. I'm going to do whatever suggests me to do is make the days count. But before I even let you know how my days are counting now, I like to share with y'all how I grew up a little bit because it was so much fun. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, so a lot of y'all down here would probably call me a Northerner, a Yankee. Right? 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 Yeah. Get over it. The war is over. Don't worry about it. We'll talk about that after here. But, you know, I grew up and I grew up with my mother and my grandparents. So there was always a lot of love in my house. Always. And the one guy that I always wanted to be like growing up was my grandfather. He was just always calm and cool. Knew everything, man. He would sit there and tell me, look up at the sky, Kenny. Yeah, clear blue, Grandpa. Yeah, it's going to rain in about 2 days. Yeah, whatever. And in 2 days it would rain. And I'm like, I was just mystified by it. He's just the most peaceful man that I've ever known. So I wanted to be like him. I also wanted to be like my dad. My father was definitely in my life growing up. And about the age of 8, my mom and father got divorced. I do have a younger sister. They got a divorce. My mom, she's doing the best she could with what she has. She's the most beautiful woman I know. She got remarried. Fine, cool. This guy was cool. Stepdad. So we took it upon ourselves to move from Milwaukee because there was a lot of stuff going on there. There had been some times where there was no electricity, no heat, and being up north with no heat is dangerous. It is dangerous. So we moved, and we moved to this little small town called Grambling, Louisiana. Grambling is about It's got a population of 2,000 with the college students. I'm moving from this big metropolitan city to this little small country town. I am not country. I don't hunt. I don't fish. If you ask me to go fishing, I'm going to A&P. Got some friends in here that, well, they don't have A&Ps anymore. Bubbles. But, you know, got some friends in here that said, well, you need to go fishing. That's a new frontier for me. But anyway, sports was one of the things that did take place in my life, and I loved it. You know, I can go ahead and tell you now, from fourth grade up until 11th grade, I was changing schools every year. We did a lot of moving. So I'm always moving around, and I always wanted to fit in. Now, growing up, you probably can't tell right now, because I've got a natural fade in the middle of my head that probably shouldn't be there, but it is. My hair was curly growing up. So in my neighborhood, I'm the lightest kid in the neighborhood with curly hair. So my nickname was Mellow Yellow. Yeah, I'm putting all y'all. Yeah, I got some writing to do after this one. Yeah. So I'm Mellow Yellow. Now, before we move to Grambling, I'm still in Milwaukee. My parents took me out of the public school and put me to his private parochial Episcopalian school. So I go there and go figure, I'm now the darkest kid at the school. So at school, I have a new nickname. Oh, no jokes now, huh? Okay. Mud Boy. And the kid that called me that, I tried to chase him around the classroom and tear his head off, and this joker could run. to this day, I didn't catch him. But, so that's where I was. Now, I really wanted to fit in. Now, at home, there was always a lot of love. Always. I mean, in my household and in my family, they would always tell me, Kenny, I love you. I love you. There was always a lot of affection. I just didn't fit in there. I don't know, but something just, they didn't understand me. That's what it was. And the only person I felt that really understood me was my grandmother. Her growing up was a lot like mine. You know, she didn't grow up with her father. I didn't really grow up with mine. My father, at the age of 10, I didn't see my father. It was actually in March of 1982. Yep, March of 1982, I didn't see my father again until January 7th of 1992. Go figure. It was like 10 years. And those are the growing years. You know, so I'm growing up with this other guy in the house. And in Milwaukee, this guy was really nice, calm, and cool with me. He was all loving. And the second we moved, everything changed. I was now going to say, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, no, sir, no, ma'am. And up north, that's, you know, just yes and no was sufficient. But, and if I didn't say that, they got this thing called a belt. And they got this other thing called my behind. My behind knew that belt so well. So, you know, I did okay in school. The grades were, according to my family, I had the worst grades on the planet. Everybody else in my family always had straight A's. I had every grade that every pro card could ever have. Teacher once gave me a Z. I asked her, I said, why a Z? She told me I couldn't go any lower. And it's not that and she would actually tell me, it's not that you're not intelligent. I would just never applied myself. But I always start off, I always had the knack for starting something and never finishing it. Anybody can get down with that? I thought I was alone for a minute. And I also had my best friend. We're still friends to this day. I've been knowing, his name's Jason. I've been knowing Jason since I was 2 years old. We're still friends to this day. And if you did the math, it's about 39. It's 39. And so growing up, you know, I would always go back to Milwaukee every Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter, summer. So it was almost, it was like being in college, holiday time, go back home. So I was always back home. And we had this plan. The goal was, he was going to play professional football. I'm going to play professional basketball. I'm going to be like Mike. I ain't even come close to Mike, but We were going to stay healthy. And a lot of guys in the neighborhood started to drink. And, you know, they would like to do some other non-conference approved AA substances called weed. And I was like, all right, well, I'm not doing that. I'm going to stay fit. This is a machine. All 135 pounds, this is a machine. And I stayed with that, man. It was one of my summers. I went back to Milwaukee, and I can remember it clear. We were talking about these guys, looking like making fun of them and stuff. So I went down to visit my, Milwaukee's real close to Chicago. So I went down to Chicago to visit my guy brother. Came back up to Milwaukee, and there it is. I see Jason with the rest of the cast. I just looked at him and just like, "You sorry son, gone." And that's not what I said, but I don't want to cuss right now. Anyway, so we're sitting there, and I was finally like, "Well, what the hell? Let me go ahead and have a shot of this just to see what it's about." Now, I didn't tell you that my grandparents would throw these whoopee parties. They would have parties every weekend. There was always a party going on. So we'd have family come over, and they'd always be drinking a little cup maybe like this. And it looked like Coca-Cola. But it didn't smell like no damn Coca-Cola. It would burn the hair in my nostrils. And I remember once I took a little swig of it. I was like, "Why do y'all like this stuff?" I remember saying at a young age, "I will never drink. Never." Mm-mm. Well, this one fine Saturday evening, I went ahead and had, I think we had like some, it was something, man, a wine cooler. A wine cooler. We shared this wine cooler, and the buzz set in. That was cool. And I went ahead and smoked some of that non-conference approved AA stuff. And didn't feel nothing. Then I stood up. And, I sat down, and I stood up. I was like, "Oh, yeah. Let's go play some basketball. Let's go talk to the girls." I didn't tell you all that I used to stutter a lot. I had a speech impediment growing up. Very shy. And I didn't talk a lot because I was always moving. That happened then about a year or so later is when, it's some time frame within there. And I suspected about the age of 13 or 14. I started drinking a little bit late in life. And went to my grandparents' house. And, up north, everybody's got a basement. So my hangout spot was always in the basement. It just was. This is where we hung out. This fellas come over there, we hang out in the basement. So Jason's over there once, and I was just like, I went back at my protein diet. I'm not going to drink any more of this stuff. I'm going to stay healthy. Got down, I'm going to Georgetown. I'm going to make it to the pros. Anyway, it didn't happen. What did happen was I had that first drink, man. This was the first one. I heard a friend of mine say that boom. Can y'all get with that boom? That sense of ease and comfort that comes in us. I just taken a sip. I don't sip. Never did sip this coffee, but so I went down there and I never knew. In fact, what happened? We were sitting there and Jason was talking about it. He said, "Hey man, Butchie and them, they're drinking and smoking some weed." I was like, "Well, nah, I ain't doing that." He says, "But Butchie made it to the Junior Olympics." Really? I said, "Okay." So we look across, my grandparents had this bar, so I'm looking across this bar, and there's lights going on and everything, it was just fantastic. And I look back there, and I see this bottle. I had to find the most dustiest one, the one that I knew that they didn't drink a lot. So I found this old, dusty bottle. It was a black label bottle with a circle that says NO.7, also known as Jack Daniels. Pick up that bottle of Jack, pour it in the cup, got a little bit of Pepsi with it so it can go down real nice and smooth. Because the first sip, I still had that 8-year-old mentality that this ain't going to do it, but I'm not about to waste this. You crazy? This is a definite whooping. If I waste it, where am I going to hide it? Found the best place to hide it. Right in my gut. And I remember drinking that, and immediately, there was no more fear. Immediately, I could speak fluently. Immediately, Einstein's theories of relativity made a lot of sense. In fact, at that moment, I'm smarter than Einstein. He ain't got nothing on this. In fact, I got it even better. I'm going to go to this basketball court and chill out the snow. I'm going to be better than Mike. But before we do that, let's go over here and talk to some girls and get some numb. And I remember saying at that moment, I don't know if I said it out loud, but I remember it real clear. I ain't never losing this feeling. Never. And I didn't. And from that moment, in fact, I was 14 years old. From that moment up until the year of 2007, I was either drinking or thinking about it. And it didn't matter which order it came, it was coming. It was there. And I had my stints also where I would try to stop drinking on my own. And I had some cool moments where I did stop. But, you know, we come in here and they start talking about these resentments. And I had something that happened to me. I was in 10th grade. And this point in my life, we were living in Florida, a town called Tallahassee. And we moved way out, and I'm still a basketball fanatic. That was my girlfriend. That was the only thing that I could trust. Nothing else could I trust. Basketball, grandma. That's it. Nothing else understood me. So I'm laying in bed one night. And anybody ever feel like you lay down and go to sleep like, damn, I just went to sleep, it's already morning? Anybody felt the same way, man? So I get up, I wake up, I was like, man, the sun's up already, I'm late. So I just jump out of bed, start getting dressed and stuff, and I look back at my clock and realize it's only about 2 in the morning. Okay, maybe the power's out. So I walk to the window, and it's a little warm. It's like, well, the sun's up, so I don't know what's going on. Is it the end of the world? Great, let's go. So I open up my little blinds and curtains and look out. Ain't no sun up. Not at all. What was happening then in my life at that time was in my front yard was this cross burning. Behind that burning cross, there's a road, and there's a couple of pickup trucks. There's a bunch of guys, and they said some racial slur stuff. But basically, boy, get out of here. I ain't going out there. No. So I went back, got my mom, told my stepfather. He comes out with this little old-ass gun. And I'm looking at him, and he's like, are you serious? There's like 12 guys outside with a lot more guns than you. Let's just call the police. But what happened at that moment, you know, there was, we call it resentment now, but at that time it was anger and hatred. So this resentment that I built up at that moment in my life was towards all white men who were from the South. If you had a twang in your voice, I ain't trust you. That's just the way it was, man. Just the way it was. And living in the South, that ain't a really easy place to live. At the same time, I started building up this real hatred towards my stepfather. This is a guy that would, every Sunday we go to church, and we're playing all the little gospel music and stuff, and he's clapping and stuff in church. And after church, he's calling me and my younger sister everything but a child of God. Basically calling me a bastard. Cussing out my mother. Put his hands on my mother. And I raised up to him one day, and he said, what? And I told him, when I get big enough one day, I'm going to kill you. I just walked away, and I meant it. I meant it. Well, lo and behold, they got a divorce, and things happened. I graduated high school, close to honors, well, 3.0, but in my family, that's not good enough. So I go off to college. Still, at this point in my life, I'm starting to drink a little bit, but now I've got another resentment against churches. So I'm the kind of guy, my religious background is not like everybody else's. I practice some other religions. I was always on a quest to find this God, but out of it, I'm also ticked off with what, you know, with culturally what was happening. What's been going on? So I had a resentment against church. And I went to this other religion, I had resentment against that religion. Went to this other religion. Your three major religions, I had resentments against all of them. By the way, I've practiced them all and lived them, but I'm now pissed with them. Because they're doing the right thing, and I'm still thinking about getting drunk. I'm still looking for that way to fit in. I don't know. I'm in college now. Tallahassee. That's a college party town. Now, I've been drinking off and on here and there, but at this point of the game, we're starting to party every Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You got to party on Sunday. That's football day. But my name is no longer Mellow Yellow. It damn sure ain't Mud Boy. it is now Earl. And my name is Earl because every time I'd go out, I would Earl all over the place. Didn't matter what the hell I was. Oh, I mean, this guy's going, this, get out the way because it's coming out. I went to this party once at this college, and they had nickel beers this night. You don't do that with a guy like me. Now, I know I don't hold down beer very well, but we're going to do our damn best. I got the recipe for it. I'm going to eat a bunch of starch. It'll hold it all down. So I'm going there to put on this $5 bill. I said, how much you want? What you got? Son of a bitch. $5. What the hell? She comes back with two trays of beer. I'm like, there we go. Oh, the party's going to start now. So before it was Earl, my name was Dirty Kenny, because Dirty Kenny is what gets the party started. And let me tell you, I'm here, and the bathroom is literally like, let's just say it's at the back end of this room, and there's a dance floor in between, and I'm sitting there, and my friends are seeing the signs, and I'm giving the signs, it's like, I gotta go. I get midway through the floor, and the beer that I put in me is now all over everybody. And that was fun. Then there's these other times when I would Earl all over my friend's car, or go to a party, get kicked out of it, or else I would go to a Denny's and Earl in there and not get kicked out of Denny's. Or I'd go to a Waffle House. Which is, you got a tip, and I'd give her a tip, and for sake of conversation, this was strictly for a men's meeting there, but let's just say that the tip was a lot more than what she deserved, and I gave a little bit too much of myself. I've been kicked out of Waffle Houses. I've been kicked out of everything. Every bar that Tallahassee owns, I can't go back to them. Didn't stop me. None of that stuff stopped me. It was September of 1998, my firstborn child was born, thank God. And I realized that I might want to start being a little bit more responsible. And I had a semester to go in school, and I stopped. But, you know, let me go here and be a father. So I went down there to be a father to my daughter, and I was engaged at the time, and started seeing that me and my fiancée, we weren't seeing life eye to eye. No, we weren't. She was a little bit more responsible than I was, and I wanted to be a little bit more responsible with the bottle and some other ways that I found out how to control my drinking. You know, this big book talks about this real alcoholic, the guy that used some sedatives to control his drinking. My sedative was called cocaine. When I took it, I was sedated and I was cool, and now I could drink, and Earl no longer exists. Dirty Kenny does, though, let me tell you. And I found a way I could drink anybody under the table with this stuff. And that went on, that went on from 90, actually before 98, but I know at that time it really escalated up until I got up in here. So, broke it off with my ex, and one of the hobbies that I had and still do have is I write poetry. I don't know. It's the only free thing that I can do where there's no rules. There's rules. But so I go to this event, and I see this beautiful woman in there. There's always some hot girls in there. Guys looking for some hot girls, don't look into me and go to the poetry spot with your sponsor. I don't know. But so I go in there, and I see her, and I was like, wow, who is she? And she stands up. I was like, whoa, who is that? Later on afterwards, we talked, and we talked for about 2 hours. And at that moment, I asked her a question. I asked her, when's her birthday? And she told me it's the day before mine. And I laughed. And she said, why are you laughing? And I told her on that day, it was in 1999, I'll tell you in 10 years. We're still married. We got married August of 2000. That's a miracle in itself. Things at this point are starting to become a blur. I can just tell you this much. I was drinking and getting high every day. Every day. There had been so many moments where I'm supposed to. I remember I had a job and I left the job and I had a 401k and I had a large sum of money. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go ahead and give my wife this amount. I'm going to tell her it was, let's just say, $20,000. Well, I'm not going to tell her it was $20,000. I told her I'm going to get back $7,000, so she'll get back $2,000, which means I'll give my daughter's mother $1,000. I'm just going to save the rest of it in case of emergency. Yeah, like when the Jack Daniels runs out, fill it up. I went crazy with it, man. And for the first time, I found a way to smoke some stuff. I smoke crackaholically. I'm a drunk junkie. That's my story. And I remember I used so many excuses before, because I would hang out and come back home a day or two late. This one time I came back home about 3 days later, and I was out of excuses. I looked at my wife straight in the face with a little jaw moving all over the place. And I was just like, I think I have a drug problem. I don't have alcohol. I didn't have alcohol problems. So I go to my first treatment. Jesus. Anyway, I go to my first treatment. Get to my first treatment spot. And in there, this counselor asked me a question. She was like, "Kenny, why do you drink? Why do you like to get drunk and high?" Who the hell asked that question? Who doesn't like to get drunk and high? Are you crazy? And at that moment, I knew that this woman doesn't know. I'm going to go ahead and try to get one over on her. So I would lie. I just lied to her. Still made it through there, and everybody in there said, "Kenny's going to succeed." Yeah, I succeeded. And after I graduated with a certificate in this treatment outline plan that this counselor had, that I didn't read at that time, I just finished reading it like 2 years ago. This thing said, go to AA, get a sponsor, and work the steps. That's exactly what it said. I just read. This is like in 2003 when I went there. I read it 2 years ago, which is 2009. I'm a little bit late sometimes. So anyway, at this point in my life, I had a clean track record. You know, there was no speeding tickets or parking tickets. I'm out one night, get pulled over, get arrested. Go in there for, and this is a trip, because I remember sitting there listening to the officers, and they were just like, "We know we can get him for a DUI, man." And they sat right there and said, "Yeah, there's too much paperwork. We got to get the breath analyzed. We got to do all this other stuff. Let's just get him for this other stuff," which was, I had a little rock on me. And they were just like, "We'll just get him for this. This is easier, and it's a felony, man. This is a bump up for you." So I go to jail for my first time. When I got out, I was just like, you know, I'm never drinking and doing that stuff ever again in my life. Ever. I learned my lesson. The consequence was too much for me. Yep. 10 days later, back at it. My wife was puzzled. I had been kicked out of the house so many times. This one time, she was just like, "You know what? I found this pastor down in, and I was living in South Florida, so there's this bishop down in Miami that can cast out evil spirits and help people in recovery in doing this." It's like, "All right, I'll give it a shot." So we go down there, and this guy's dressed me in some white stuff, like his white little gown or whatever it is. And he puts this oil on my head and rubs it. Start saying, "Do you believe?" And I get dipped in the water, come up, and I felt something. He's like, "Do you believe? Do you believe, brother?" And I was just like, "Yeah, I believe. I hope. I hope it works. Jesus. Please help." It didn't work, man. I then also saw that you can do acupuncture. I mean, I was trying to do this stuff, man, on my own. I tried the acupuncture stuff. They started shoving needles on my arms and my ears and in my toes and stuff. And I had some other ailments in my body from basketball injuries. They're gone. But the getting drunk and high move was, it didn't work. I then read something else about hypnosis. I just recently remembered this too, man. I paid this guy for like 4 sessions, so you do it like for a month. And the first week, it felt great. I felt a little bit more secure of myself, sure of myself. Next week, yeah, I don't ever have to do that anymore. Third week, this shit doesn't work. Crazy. Get out of here, man. It didn't work. I also went back to treatment a couple more times. I'm letting you all know that I've done everything that I could do to try to stop. My first honest attempt at AA was on April 5th, 2006. I was done. And I had a sponsor. My sponsor at that time, his name was Rocky. And it was weird because down there in Florida where I was, my sponsor at the time didn't have a year. And people were saying, "You know, Rocky's your sponsor. He doesn't even have a year." I was like, "Yeah, I know. Isn't that a miracle?" But the guy had something I wanted. He was the first person ever to actually tell me what I might have
And it made some sense because he also told me how he got there, how he drank. He drank like I did. He got high like I did. It didn't matter what it was. He told a lot of the same lies that I told. Like one time I locked myself in the trunk of the car. Some police came. I have proof that I was kidnapped. And my wife had to believe me. South Florida gets hot, man. Damn Trump, let me tell you. But I had to have proof. In other words, I had to rationalize and justify my lie. That didn't work. But this guy shared with me that I'm dying. I'm dying. And didn't know. He told me that I have a mental obsession so powerful that nothing on the planet Earth could break it. Nothing physical anyway. None of y'all can. And I try to get you all to convince me. Treatment won't do it. The judge won't do it. Try that one too. That wasn't by choice. Oh, actually it was by choice. But it wasn't. Well, yeah, whatever. It's tricky. Wife couldn't do it. My kids couldn't do it. I'm a father. I have six beautiful children as well. All this stuff that I tried to do to stop y'all, nothing worked. So anyway, I came in, had to go back into that confined space called jail. Left there, went directly to this treatment facility, which is very intense. Got out of that, and me and Rocky got busy right away. And for the first time in my life, I actually was guided through something and followed some directions. I celebrated my year, that year of 2007, which was April, and 2 months and 2 days later to the date, my wife and I decided to move from South Florida because it was too expensive for the kids. We wanted to have some more room for them and stuff, and I'm always blessed. In fact, we are all blessed right now. But I was blessed with this job position, sold a house. So there was, on the outside, everything was great. The picture looked beautiful. And we moved up here, bought a house. And I was working, so my boss thought I was up here. My wife thought I was at work. I snuck back to that apartment just to take a break and get some sleep. Jeez. And I get back in there, and this thought came to mind, man. Kenny, you're uptight, man. Why don't you go to a meeting? Nah, I don't want to go to that meeting. I don't like those some bitches anyway, man. I'll go to one later on. I can't stand them there. Why don't you read the big book? This is really what's going on in my mind. Nah, I don't feel like reading it right now. Why don't you pray? Nah, I don't feel like talking to God. Why don't you meditate? I don't listen to that some gun either, man. I'm just going to eat this pizza and go to sleep. And I woke up, and there's this thought that hit me. Why don't you just see what Shorty and them are doing? Just to say hi. And I gave him a call. And I remember going to go pick up. I got a little bottle of alcohol, a little bottle of my other fun stuff. And I was not going to stay in this area. In other words, what I did, I picked it up and I drove back to my apartment. And I'm crying the whole way. And I know that if I just call somebody, things might be all right. But this big book lets me know. On page 24, it says when this thinking is firmly established in a person with alcoholic tendencies. He's probably placed himself beyond human aid. The exact thought that crossed my mind at that time was just two words. And I know this is being recorded, and I know I probably got a little bit dirty mouth earlier, but this is literally what I said. And in my belief, the English language does not always express what I'm really going through. And I know the big book calls it a peculiar mental twist, or the insanity, or the insidious thought. It was shared with me and it made a whole bunch of sense. I said, fuck it. I don't care. I'll go to jail again. I know what to expect there. I know how the bologna sandwich is going to taste. I'm getting the bottom bunk this time. You know, wife might put you out. It's all right. Odds in my favor. I'm in Miami, Fort Lauderdale. Find me another winner. You'll lose your job. I don't need the damn job anyway. I don't like it that much. They don't like me. And I went ahead and did it. And I kept on coming back in and out, man, for like a whole month and a half. It was from July 14th of 2007. I'd been out maybe 2 days. I got back to my apartment and I sat there, and this guy, his name is Bill Wilson, you might have heard of him. He mentioned that the loneliness and despair, you know, he mentioned basically a quicksand starts around him in all directions. That's exactly what I felt, man. And I sat there in that damn apartment, and I said, man, the hell did I just do? I just promised and said I wasn't going to do it again, and I did it. Some of my hopeless feeling. I came to AA, and at that moment in my life, I was like, AA won't even work for a guy like me. And since I'm a drunk junkie, and I love AA, don't think I don't. I'm in recovery, so I go to, well, if there's a meeting, I'm going. Nothing's going to work for a guy like me is what I thought. That's what seems hopeless. That's the hopeless state of mind and body. Personally, if you haven't gotten it yet, I pray for your bottom. That's the only thing that seemed to work for me. And I've heard the same thing from people that's been around here either as long as I've been alive or longer. So anyway, I come through the next day, talk to my dad. My dad's in this deal. Bless his heart. And I love him. We have a relationship today as well, as a direct result of me willing to do something different with my life. I called him up and said, man, he said, we've been trying to call you. I said, I know. He said, what happened? And I just said, man, I messed up again. I could barely get it out. I felt like an 8-year-old kid crying. He said, damn, man, you just celebrated a year. I've been blessed to have people in my life that has always just been straight, direct, and to the point. Don't sugarcoat nothing. My sponsor's that way. My wife's definitely that way. My dad's that way. Everybody I know that's in my life seems to be that way. He says, well, ain't nothing we can do about that now. He says, if you ain't done, go on back out there and finish up, man. My suit's already pressed for you. That hurt. And he was like, I said, well, I don't know what to do. I'm done. He said, all right, well, shower because I know you stink. Go eat something to eat because I know you're hungry. Shave because I know you look like crap. And get out that daggum apartment. See, the guy, I had a guy that I was in treatment with staying there with me because Kenny's going to get him sober. Not God, not AA. Me. I don't have that much power. I left that apartment, went to go stay with a couple of my friends down there, and I can remember my sponsor at that time was a guy by the name of Nate, and I love Nate to this day. Nate told me, he says, hey man, what you need to do is go and get your two tall boys to drive over to this detox facility. Anybody wants to know what two tall boys are? That's called two beer. And I told him no. Mm-mm. Hell no, I ain't doing that. I'm done. I ain't doing it. He says, good luck. Tell me how it works out. So every year, July 14th, I call up and tell him how it's working. The next couple of days is just a blur. But I remember something that stood out. And next day, I call up. My dad calls me. He's just like, have you called your wife? I'm like, for what? He's like, let her know that you're alive. I says, look, man, I have nothing to say. I told her last week that I'm done. She says, if I do it again, it's over. It's over. What am I going to do? I can't convince this woman. Are you crazy? Her? By the way, I am scared of my wife. So I don't mess with that little woman. I ain't doing it. But I said, all right, so far this guy's been right. So I get on the phone and I call her. And as I'm dialing the number, I shoot up this another prayer to God. I say, God, you know what? Give me one more chance. I'll do anything. I've never felt that before in my life. I don't even know if I've ever said that before in my life. So she gets on the phone and you hear her, you know, typical stuff. I'm like, yeah. Then she says, I don't know why I'm saying this to you, Kenny. I don't know why I'm saying this. But I'm going to give you one more chance. Flip me out, because I just finished asking God for one more chance. And this woman on the phone is going to give me one more chance. I said, all right, what do I have to do? He says, pack your stuff. Pay your job, you're leaving. And this was on a Sunday, by the way. Me and your father will be there this Wednesday. So I had to go on to work the next day. I was shocked that I still had a job. I gave him 2 days' notice, and they gave me a letter of recommendation to come up here.
I don't know. Coincidence, blessing. It's a blessing. And they came and got me. And I'm up, and I come up here. July 19th of 2007. Been up here in Georgia since. And I started going to meetings. And I live out in Conyers. So I go to the meeting out that way. And I walk into this clubhouse. I was like, oh, here we go again. These are the same guys that set that damn cross on fire in my damn yard. Now they moved up here. These damn trucks and these beers. Well, I'm bigger now, you son of guns. We're going to have to do this the right way like men. Never happened. I was loved in this place. I'm a meeting junkie still. They told me when I came up here to get connected. Because a guy like me, if I'm not connected, I'm not protected. Wow. So I started going to meetings out there. There's another clubhouse that I go. I've been to every clubhouse here, and I frequent them quite a bit. My first time coming over here to Napa, this is before I even asked Don to be my sponsor. I walk in here, and there's a smell that's in here that reminds me of my grandparents' basement. So I feel at home here. It's just like, wow, this is cool. All right, I can dig this spot. Anyway, I asked this guy to be my sponsor, and he wears these sunglasses, so I thought he was blind the first time I saw him. I was like, aw, there's another blind guy in here. Then after me, this guy was walking like, this son, is he blind? What the hell is this? But I liked what he shared. You know, and the next day I saw him, and we're at this other clubhouse. He shared something else, and I talked to him after the meeting, asked him if he goes to heavy hitters, and he said, yeah. He's, you know, sitting just shooting the breeze with me, all nice, calm, and cool. He says, how much time you got, man? If you don't mind me asking. Oh, man, I've got 18 days. I didn't even ask him how much time he got. He's just like, then I went back, well, you know, I had, you know, this and this and this. I had 14 months before. And he stopped me, dead in my tracks. He says, you know what time is, man? I said, yeah, well, you know, time is the earth spinning on its rotation on its axis as it rolls around this. It's giving all this definition stuff. He's just like, oh, yeah, you're one of these smart guys, yeah. No, time is things I must earn. And I was like, whoa. I asked him to be my sponsor. And this guy told me something flat out. He says, look, I'll make a deal with you. I'll make a deal with you, man. If you ever want to get drunk or high, you give me a call. I said, okay. I heard that before. He says, I'll get you all the alcohol and dope you want. I got the right sponsor here, baby. Let's go. He says, there's one condition. I'm thinking, like, what, I got to share? What? He says, no, you got to die. What? Yeah, man. You're killing yourself anyway, so let's not be a punk about it. Let's go ahead and do it. I haven't made that call. I haven't found it necessary. He also suggested, well, he said also that my homies I got to go to, and also this thing called the Rock. He says, yeah, we go to the Rock. I'm like, the Rock? I'm like, I just finished smoking this stuff, and I got to go to it? What the hell? He says, no, man, it's where 400 men get together in the woods. No, 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 no. Oh, man, I ain't doing that. And I said, well, why, man? He says, that's what we do. He says, is that what you've done? He says, yeah. All right. See, what happened is, guy also told me a story. I was convinced. You know, I'm a big book. I just say I like the book a lot. My sponsor is a thumper. I just like it. Hell, whatever. I'm a thumper. Whatever. Sue me. I don't care. But it does mention in here that, but the ex-problem drinker was found this solution, is properly armed with facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a couple of hours. He got my confidence right away. So we get busy. And I'm about to tell you guys about my first real spiritual experience. Oh boy. I got drunk for a long time, sorry. But I go out here to this thing called this Rock. And my sponsor gives me this thing to do. It's called a sports step. Now, At first I was dreading it because I was hearing about stuff, ways to dread it and stuff. And this guy finally said something to me. He's just like, what are you dreading it for, man? This is the only time you can actually point your finger at this person and write it down. This person did this. Oh, you did that. You some old. But that son of a, yes. He says, man, have fun with it. I said, okay, cool. So I did. But I sit down with Don and he looks it over. Hands it back to me. It's not thorough enough. So I automatically assume that I am effing up. And I go into this workshop that they had going on there, and they were doing going over the fourth step, and it was really cool. And they asked for an example of a resentment. So I raised my hand. I got one. What do you resent? God. Why? He took my grandmother from me, my grandfather from me, my two best friends from me, and he made me an alcoholic. Son of a bitch. Now I forgot what else he said. They get this part called the fears. Man, got a fear? Yeah, I do. What do you fear? God. Why? Look, I just finished praying this son of a bitch. Now I'm angry and I don't know what's going to happen, man. And I was uptight. I was uptight. And when I get uptight, I'm closed-minded. I'm not letting nothing else in. It's my way again. And I got so uptight I wanted to get away from 400 men who were all in the woods. But I got another degree of separation for a month. And I was sitting out here, I remember walking, I just looked up and said, God, if you're really the real deal, prove yourself to me. I don't want to hear these damn birds. I've been hearing them my whole life, especially at 4 in the morning when you get drunk and high. I don't want to hear no more damn birds. And this guy comes walking around the corner and he's like, hey man, heard you had a problem with God. What? I mean, just like that. And I didn't see it at the time, but at that moment, this guy shared with me exactly how he felt. And out here, there's no phone reception. This guy's phone home. And his grandmother just died. And he stepped away and he cried and he came back to me just like, God's always going to do better for anything else than what I can ever do. I was sold. I was sold. I went back in and finished my fourth step. And I sat down with Don and we did this fifth step. And there's this promise. I can't remember it off the top of my head right now. But there's another astonishingly moving moment for me that happens. It happens for me. It happens every time I read this. And it goes a little bit like this. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We find on a broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. It's exactly what I felt. Exactly what I felt. Man, I could talk about this forever. Obviously, I can't talk about it forever right now. I do want to say one other thing. And it says this also in this book. About, anybody ever hear the word indispensable? They talk about it in here. And for a long time, I didn't know what indispensable really meant. And I was actually blessed to sit down with another guy the other day. And we looked it up. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are absolutely necessary is what indispensable means. Absolutely. Absolutely necessary. Am I willing to do something different with my life? Am I honest enough to admit that my way don't work? And there's a way here that's been working since, actually since December of 1934, and we took off in 1935 and ain't stopped. Am I open minded enough to realize that if I listen, help will come? Am I willing to ask for help and not tell help how to help me? Man, there's just so much great things that I've experienced in this deal with the ups and downs. And it's an honor and privilege to be here with you. I want to thank Dabble for inviting me out. And maybe Treasure Road to Happy Destiny. Thank you and bless you.
Kenny. That's how you do it. That's how Kenny did it. I asked Eric to give out the check.
My name's Eric, and I am an alcoholic. We offer a white chip for anyone who wants to give this way of life a try for the next 24 hours. You want to pick up a white chip today? We offer a silver chip. 90 days for a red chip. 6 months for a yellow chip. 9 months for a green chip. Here's our multiple zero for a blue chip. Woo!
My name is Diana, and I'm an alcoholic. I can't believe this. Woo-hoo! I'm Pam, I'm an alcoholic. And I can't believe it's 5 years. And now it's really been an important place, a place I know I can come from. So cool that sending me starting at 7:30 in the morning and going some nights until 11 at night. My home group party is tomorrow night at 8 p.m. at Leroy Daniel Center, and a friend of mine with 27 years is going to be telling her story. So if you like stories, there's another one tonight.
Thanks.
Today. And I want to thank, first of all, my God, AA, and Steps. The answer of getting sober and happy is Steps. You know, I think the way is right.
Any other considerations on the white chip? Thank God for the chip calls.
Congratulations on everybody's time, and we can share announcements if you have any AA-related announcements. Yes.
Hi, Victoria, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Victoria.
And I'm going to go to the meeting, but I was asked to announce it here. It was announced, I think, last Monday or Monday before. But anyway, it's the 43rd anniversary dinner and speaker meeting that's going to be at Mount Vernon, the Mount Vernon Group. And they have a supposedly very dynamic speaker, Peggy M. from Nebraska. And you have to get tickets for this. This is the dinner meeting. And I've already gotten my tickets, and I'm going, so I won't be here next Monday night. But if anybody wants information, are interested, I'll leave this here and or pass it on so you can call whoever you like to get it.
I have 4 tickets to that meeting for anybody who wants them. $10 for a ticket, 15 for 2.
Well, next week, we're having Paula R. from Fly Cabin Group in Tucker Turtles, and she sponsors a lot of women. She's really good as well. So you got a lot of good choices for next Monday night. And then after that, the week following, Larry Scott, or Larry S., he's going to share his story. He's a Mount Vernon guy from the Dunwoody. Yeah, not a Glum Lot group. So that'll be on the 20th, so 2 weeks from tonight's Larry S. And next Monday night's Paula R. Okay, so if there are any other announcements, I would like to say that anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions. Every mind is placed principles before personalities, and for those who will, please join us in the Lord's Prayer.
Glorious makes a great meeting.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. God is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. He comes back with the words of the Lord.
Yes, the Lord.